Did you know? A Labubu movie is apparently heading to the big screen.
Oh, a Labubu movie?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it going to be like the Lego movie? The Labubu movie?
Well, that's the thing. Apparently it's quite early days. They don't know like what it will be, but Sony has recently purchased the rights to Labubu. So they can make a movie.
Sony's purchased the rights to Labubu.
Yeah, to the movie rights. Here's something crazy. Did you know that there's a Labubu has been glued to Karl Marx's grave?
Look, glued.
Yeah, somebody has written just like Comrade Labubu on it.
Why?
No clue. But apparently, so Sony Pictures have officially snagged the screen rights to the Labubu toy line.
Good for them.
They have no idea what this is going to be. Here's a great line from Pedestrian. Thanks, Pedestrian.
Thanks, Pedestrian.
For giving us all the important news. Celebs have been touting the cursed-looking monster everywhere, helping the little mischief maker leap from niche toy shelves to global status symbols faster than you could say late-stage capitalism.
What's a niche toy shelf? Like, what's that mean?
A niche toy shelf. Like, you know,
you go to a toy shop, which is a thing that people aren't doing. And then you go to a shelf and it's like niche.
Oh, this
stuff.
Is for the weird toys. This is for the weird niche toys.
Like, what are we doing?
You don't
doing
see
here?
These toys in Kmart. This isn't your nan's
Who's,
toy shelf.
So are there just like niche toy collectors and then some of them are like, oh, y'all ain't even on this yet. I got this, you haven't even called it.
You don't even fucking know.
It's called a Labubu? Labubu? And then someone's like Labubu. It's like Labubu. It's called Labubu. I think it's gonna Laboom Boom in 2025.
Fuck.
I mean, you know, people are entitled to their sexual proclivities, you know. I mean, let there be a thousand blossoms bloom. But I ain't spending any time on it. But I ain't spending any time on it. But I ain't spending any time on it. Let there be a thousand blossoms bloom. But I ain't spending any time on
it. All right. Hey, do you like the flag I've made?
Wow, what is this? There is no deity of worship, but... It
says Grog.
Grog.
It says Corey.
Corey is the messenger of Grog.
That's the Shahada if you replace God with Grog and Muhammad with Corey.
That's powerful.
So the Saudi flag has the Shahada on it written in Arabic. And then a sword under it, so I've just got...
A beer bottle instead. I love that.
Yeah, this is...
That does look iconic, baby.
Yeah, we're calling this Saudi Australia.
Saudi Australia?
I shouldn't have come adventure through the desert.
Oh, thrilled.
Yeah, we're just going to start somewhere and see where we go.
Hell yeah.
And we're not going to start in Saudi Arabia. In fact, we're going to start with an episode we touched on a few weeks ago.
Oh?
Where we talked about telecommunications in Australia.
Ooh, where are we starting?
So, dear listener, if you haven't listened to that episode, we'll catch you up on some of the salient facts. Australian phones, radio, and satellites used to be government-owned and managed. And then, what did we do in the 1980s, Kieran?
We privatized them.
We sold them off.
Yep.
These national entities were sold off to private companies, and this is why Optus is owned by the Singaporean Prime Minister, or whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever, some shit. And
you
like,
know, just some shit
Vodafone
like that.
And shit. Like, it's just nonsense.
Complete nonsense. So... Most rational economists will tell you that the profit motive completely cratered the delivery of these services. They've all gotten worse since then.
Yes.
Many things have happened. There's a lot more people here.
Sure.
Perhaps the services weren't built to have more people. But there was something that we didn't talk about and I hadn't thought about. What happened to all that money the government got for selling off Telstra?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah.
Yeah. What's that happened? Well, those billions turned into a big chunk of the seed capital for the Future Fund.
Oh, the Future Fund.
All right, Kieran, what the fuck is a Future Fund?
Well, isn't it that weird thing that, like, the government just, like, shoves money into it and that money is then invested into, like shit that will theoretically make them more money?
Yeah. And the reason it exists, the reason the government acts like a big, evil, multinational investment company is for our pensions and superannuation.
Right. It's all super related.
So it's like, this is how we're going to guarantee your superannuation is we're going to invest money.
We're going to gamble it on the market.
We're going to gamble it on the market, yes. It's I mean, probably not our pensions. I'm really going to be surprised if the Australia of our elderly years is distributing pensions to childless, agender nihilist terrorists or whatever they call us.
How dare.
But in 2006, when Telstra and such was being sold off, that money was invested into companies around the world. And the return on these investments will fund stuff eventually.
Right.
Some of it been used for some things. I think national parks are part of this. But most recently, Jim Chalmers has said that it could be used for green energy projects if appropriate.
Okay, sure. You could say anything could be used for anything if appropriate.
That's all right. I challenge you to figure out something that you can't say that about.
Okay.
What can't you use the Future Fund for?
Enslaving children, if appropriate.
Oh, that's crazy. All right, so we'll get there later.
Uh-oh.
No, I don't know if there's kids. Anyway, ultimately, it's a reserve for superannuation.
Yeah.
So if they run out of money, hey, we're going to have this to pay for, you know, your super and stuff.
Yeah.
If they're falling short on being able to pay people.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it's not good. I don't like it.
Like, it's just the idea that all of this money is floating around in a fake way is deeply distressing.
And there's a great deal of effort being put into managing the Future Fund. The people who run it get a lot of money.
Yeah, I bet they do.
Any roughly aware person will have problems handing the responsibility of the future to companies with the priority of money now.
Yes.
When I say roughly aware, I mean if you can see a link between the profit and growth motives and the deterioration in the quality of anything. If the goal is to make money, that is, if you're a company, then you're going to be taking whatever shortcuts you can and compromising whatever morals or whatever you must.
Yeah.
To ensure the good times keep rolling. I think we've all kind of got here ourselves. I think a lot of people are seeing this in different ways, but just to reiterate, there's not good and bad companies fighting for survival. The way that companies work and the way that corporations work is bad.
Yes.
There's a quote often attributed to famous fascist Benito Mussolini, but he mightn't have said it. But it goes along the lines of fascism should be more properly called corporatism because it is the merger of state and corporate power.
I like that, though.
So the idea that he's saying is that the big thing we have is the companies and the government are working together.
Yeah, and just like being this unholy bastard child of capitalism that just kind of, I don't know, it's a really unholy alliance when it comes to like the reality of, I guess, people.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds a lot like you have the king and you have the feudal lords.
Yeah.
You know, the way that works.
Absolutely.
It's the same
yeah.
structure, and the feudal lords and the managers of companies have the same priority.
Yeah.
Which is massive efficiency wherever possible. Yeah. But yeah, he said that in Italian, I guess. But he didn't say it. But if he had said it, it would have been in Italian. So.
Okay, fair. Let them eat cake.
Yeah, governments and companies, they work together to make money holders the most money. And that's good for everyone somehow.
Sure.
So after Peter Costello sold off some of the fundamental connective tissue of our society. So that's the treasurer of the time. He shopped at the same fish shop as my parents.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, so my dad would be like, I just saw Peter Costello like in a singlet buying fish.
It's like, damn, you should have stolen his superannuation.
Yeah, you should have asked him about Telstra, I guess. Anyway, the money that they got didn't go straight back into things.
Yeah.
Like the Telstra money, some of it, I think, went to things in the relatively short term, and then most of it's gone into the super fund.
That makes sense.
Urban farming, drought relief, homelessness prevention, those are things that have been, like, raised, and I think some of the money has been used in some of those areas in very small amounts, but largely investment.
Yeah, largely it seems like what? It's just this like big pot of money that you know, they've got to kind of like hoard over.
Exactly. And the first big controversy I could find about the Future Fund, was back in 2011 when it was found that $135 million had been invested in nuclear weapons companies, including nuclear armed submarines for India.
What?
Yeah, I guess we're like a proud nuclear submarine nation going way back.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's definitely illegal at the time and for now for the Future Fund to do this because of rules about investing in weapons and in nuclear energy. But
yeah, that's insane. What the fuck?
Yeah, but it never mattered because we're about making that money.
Of course.
And everyone needs these nuclear submarines.
Yeah, wait. So we're only getting nuclear submarines, theoretically, in the next, like, 50 years.
Yes, and I want to be clear, the position of shouldn't have come is that we don't want any nuclear submarines.
Yes.
But in the nuclear submarines market, we are still being ripped off.
Yeah, what the fuck? And, like, and this is 2011, you said.
This is back in 2011.
What the fuck is going on?
Let's talk about some numbers here.
Yeah.
So, millions and billions.
I'm scared of those numbers.
Million is actually much smaller than a billion.
I have heard this.
250 million is a quarter billion.
Got it.
So you can say things in different ways. You can put it this way. The Future Fund has more than $200 billion of it. And one half of 1 billion measly dollars is invested in war and weapons. That leaves $199.5 billion that aren't being invested in war and weapons.
Okay.
What are you leftists complaining about? Or you could put it this way. The Australian Future Fund invests at least $600 million in weapons companies.
Yeah, that's yucky. Oh, that's bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's not very good.
Journalism is about knowing when to use a million or a billion, depending on what story you're trying to tell.
It's like, this is all about framing.
Exactly. So those stocks have gone all the way up in the last couple of years.
Oh, wow. Why? What's been going on?
Probably the most famous name is Elbit Systems, which is Israel's largest private weapons maker.
Oh, yeah.
So they make killing machines like the Hermes. Is Hermes the fashion brand?
I think Hermes is the fashion
brand. And you say Hermes if it's like a...
The god of a drone. Whatever.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to call it the Hermes 450. They'll only give it to you if you like look like you deserve it.
Yeah, you know, if you go into the weapon store, they'll like offer you a weapon based on how like dictatorial your government appears to
how
be.
How big your moustache is.
Exactly, how big your moustache is. They're just like, God, we could probably give you like a guided missile. That's what we can offer you today. Somebody else walks in, you know. Trump walks in and is like, sir, please.
Sir, do you want the 450 drone?
You know, we do have the latest model.
Just in front of you. Yeah. Gets champagne.
Exactly. And they're like, are you still here? What are you still here for?
So the Hermes drone, 450.
Yeah, the Hermes drone.
It is what was used to explode Zombie Francom, an Australian aid worker in Palestine.
Right, yeah.
So since the war began, Australia's stocks in Elbit have gone from $400,000 to more than $2.5 million in value.
Damn, okay.
Basically, what that means is that the company Elbit is making so much money that the amount of shares we had in it is now worth six times more or whatever. Yeah. Am I suggesting that Australia profited from the brutal murder of an Australian aid worker?
Yes, and you're right to say so. They did.
Damn, my next line here is, I would never do that, but the facts might imply that. But you're right. Let's stand on a bit, like, obviously, let's not be cute.
In my opinion, yes.
And I have a note here from me. Hey, Yanni, your alma mater reinvested in Elbit Systems, which is...
I read this about ANU.
ANU has reinvested in Elbit Systems, which... So, ANU, the Australian National University, has always been quite controversial for the investment that it makes in companies.
That
because
makes
it
sense.
Has a future fund or whatever. But yeah, Elbit Systems...
Which is going so well for it, given how many layoffs there are.
ANU had $138,000 of shares in Elbit Systems. Mm. Bought them in March of 2025. So like in like 12 days after the ceasefire, and like that, obviously the quote-unquote ceasefire.
Yeah.
They reinvested.
That's fucking ridiculous.
Isn't that evil?
Yeah.
But yeah, the amount that the Australian Future Fund has in Elbit is really small fry compared to the value of Australian shares in some other weapons companies.
Okay.
I've got a table from The Guardian showing the growth in some of these shares since October of 2023.
Gosh, I wonder why then.
Who knows? Who do you see here?
Let's see. First up, we have Lockheed Martin.
What do you know about them?
Lockheed Martin, they are weapons manufacturing.
I believe they're the biggest weapons manufacturing, defense and aerospace.
They make me think of, their logo makes me think of Tony Stark.
Yeah, they've got...
Like Lockheed Martin, like, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
the
Avengers-y pointy logo.
Yeah. Lockheed Martin, okay, so October of 2023, what did we have here? That was like 71 million up to, in June 2025, 88 million. That's a percentage increase of 23%.
There you go. So obviously, like, the bigger companies like Lockheed, they're not having as big a percentage growth.
It's already pretty big.
It's already pretty big. So they're having incremental growth.
Oh, no, I just read ahead. So we've got what I presume is BAE Systems, but it's Bay Systems. Bay Systems.
What do you reckon it stands for?
Before anyone else. Did I do it?
Yeah, that was what was on the note when he's blind or whatever. Yeah, no, it's I think British Aerospace Engineering, something like that.
Some bullshit.
But it's a British aerospace company.
Theirs is up 88%.
Yeah.
What is that, like Tails?
Yeah, I think Tails. I don't really know. They're another. Obviously, these are all weapons companies.
Yeah.
Tails is a French one.
Tails. Okay, they're up 56%. They're also, like, much smaller. This is, like, a 3 million up to 5 million situation. Yeah,
exactly. And the smaller companies, I think Tails is a fairly big company, but they've... So they're actually partially owned by the French state. So they are, like, a French future fund company.
Gotcha.
And if you go to their controversies, there's some... One of them is just South Africa.
Oh,
Taiwanese,
no.
British summer, Brazil submarines, Kiwi Rock bombings, Russian supplies after arms embargo of the EU. So
just a whole bunch of fucking shit.
That's Tails. Then we have aforementioned.
Elbit's is crazy.
Yeah, what's that percent?
That percent is 449%.
We made money off Elbit Systems.
Huge
and we
money.
We continue to invest
Holy
in them.
Holy shit. Of course, because by the numbers, this is the biggest profit for investment.
Yeah, return on investment. Yeah, like, I mean, so the amount of money, right, that our shares in Lockheed Martin have grown is more than the amount that we have invested in Elbit in total. So the question of scale here is, like, Australia's shares in Elbit have grown 500%, and the fact that Elbit's specifically an Israeli company is quite, you know, disgusting, but it's a safe bet to invest in a weapons company.
Yeah, I mean, these have all done incredibly well, it seems. Like,
yeah.
This is crazy. The other groups we've got what, Northrop Grumman?
Northrop Grumman.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It's the fifth largest contractor to the U.S. federal government. They are, an American. What do they make? Thermonuclear weapons, strategic bombers, multi-platform radar technology, the B-1 Lancer. They've won the Collier Trophy 9 times. What do you reckon's on their criticism? Environmental record, political contributions and government ties, controversies. Yeah, you know, they're just evil people.
Standard shit.
Yeah.
And we got Boeing?
Yeah, Boeing does a lot of weapons work.
Makes sense.
I think aircraft carriers is mainly their thing.
That makes a lot
of sense. But precision engagement systems as well. Missiles. Yeah, no, they do air-related military stuff as well.
We got Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, so I think they make tanks.
That's fucking crazy.
But let me just Google Rolls-Royce weapons.
Because, like, our increase...
oh, no, they make cannons.
Damn.
And,
our increase with them was also pretty big, like, for investment. Like,
yeah, Rolls-Royce is doing great.
Yeah, so we invested $2 million and we've made $7.5 million, which is an increase of 268%. So that's our second biggest... future fund weapons investment.
Rolls-Royce specifically supplies a lot to Israel. I was just reading now.
Yeah.
In terms of their, like, combat vehicles and missiles and stuff. Rheinmetall, you said German?
Yeah.
It is. Largest German and fifth largest European arms manufacturer.
There we go.
Derived from the German language words Rhein and Metal, translating to Rhein Metal when combined.
Wow, that's crazy.
Not on the list that I've got for Karen here is our local enemy, Raytheon.
Or Raytheon.
Or the big evil company that hoovers up all our data to surveil us, Palantir.
It's insane that they called that Palantir, by the way.
Yeah, for people who don't know, Palantir is run by Peter Thiel. And it's a surveillance company that is deeply tied to the United States and world governments. And Palantir is...
The Palantir is a mystical orb in Lord of the Rings that is, like, used by the evil wizard to, like, look at people and where they are. It's connected to Sauron. And when you touch it, you see, like, terrible things.
Yeah. You know, like...
It's like an evil device in the fantasy
it's
book.
An evil surveillance device.
Yeah.
And
they were like, I got it. Let's call ourselves evil surveillance device.
I really identify with Sauron.
You know?
Sauron? Sauron.
S- Sauron.
Also, I had a read down all the companies, not just the weapons companies that we're investing in, and it includes some famous names. You ready for some of these?
Yeah.
BlackRock.
BlackRock.
Yeah, no surprises there.
Airbnb.
Get an Airbnb.
Stupid, but okay.
Colgate.
Colgate Max White Ultimate.
Okay, all right.
Uber.
Stupid, but okay.
Domino's.
Domino's is introducing...
What?
Rio Tinto.
You can't 1-2 that. Domino's is laughable. Oh, we're investing in Domino's? Oh, the Australian government has invested in Domino's.
And McDonald's.
That one makes more sense to me.
What about Lululemon?
That's fucking ridiculous. What are you talking about?
Our pensions are tied to the success of Lululemon.
That's fucked.
I'll send you the full list later.
That's so fucked.
A lot of it's investment companies, and then it's like Lululemon.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I've decided to invest in JJ's or some shit.
A lot of it's like Intel, you know, for instance.
JB Hi-Fi?
Ooh, I think we are. I think JB Hi-Fi's on it. JB. No, that's JB Hunt.
Damn. Okay, what about Rebel Sport?
Rebel Sport. No, that's a loser. Rebel Sport's not a winning investment.
Fuck.
But we might be, like, one of these might be the company that owns those things, right? Because there's hundreds. Like, this is, like, a long list.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's 23 pages long, so...
Fuck.
Anyway, our pensions are tied to the success of Lululemon.
That's really important to me.
Let's get off the future.
You know what? I'm ordering Domino's tonight just so I can support the everyday Australian.
Well, we've made it so you have to.
Yeah.
You have to buy Lululemon and Domino's and McDonald's and get a website from GoDaddy and go...
Drink all the Rio Tinto oil I can stomach.
And live in Colgate or whatever.
Yeah, I can't wait to live in Colgate.
Rent an Airbnb to brush your teeth with.
Exactly.
So let's... Okay, we'll focus on Elbit specifically.
Yes.
So our relationship with them goes deeper than investment. Just recently, on the 25th of October 2025, the Australian government purchased $20 million worth of missiles from the Israeli missile and drone warfare company Elbit Systems.
$20 million worth? How many missiles is that?
Oh, I don't know, 9? I don't know, 6?
Why the fuck are we buying missiles from Israel?
Why are we buying missiles? Like, what
can't
are we
just
doing?
Make them? I don't know.
A, can't we just make them?
And also, do we need them right now?
Like, have we ever?
Surely we've got missiles already that we haven't used. There's missiles at home.
There has to be missiles
We're not buying missiles. We're not going and getting takeaway missiles from Israel. You've got Israel to eat at home. You've got missiles to eat at home.
There's a cache of missiles ready to launch at the point where all the states intersect in the middle of Australia along that line, you know?
Iconic, yes.
Surely. Anyway, so the fucking fake-ass ceasefire paper, the new one, isn't even called, and Australia is buying the Iron Fist system. That's the name of the system they bought.
Fuck off.
I'll give you an iron fist,
iron fist you. Fist you with an iron.
Gave a transgender man 2 pints, gonna get lucky and iron fist him tonight.
You know, I was giving him the old iron fist. Yeah, it's a thing where I destroy his home and kill his family.
Fuck. Jesus. Yeah, anyway, and you fuck him.
And I fuck him.
It's not like Elbit has a sterling international reputation, right? They're like a scummy kind of company. In 2021, a country with an Elbit contract uninstalled their battle management system due to fears that it was being used to steal data and spy on the army.
Well, because that's literally what's happening, right?
Yeah, like, it's something that Israel's known to do.
Yeah, haven't we seen... I wish I had any information in my head other than me
Go
being
on.
Like...
Let me try to bring it up.
Okay. There was a big controversy, right, where Israel was distributing policing systems worldwide, like a software they developed, but there was a backdoor access to it in that Israel was able to view every country that purchased its, like, policing and criminal records and like all this fucking insane shit. I can't remember the name of the software, but I remember seeing that.
I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Israel police software. Pegasus.
Pegasus.
And I think, it's been used to surveil journalists and such around the world. There's also one called Graphite that can hack into any phone. There's a few, basically. This happens over and over again.
Common.
Yeah. The country that we were talking about in this instance with the battle management system, Australia,
Jesus,
were buying Elbit drones again within the year.
That's just fucking insane. That is fucking insane.
Less than a year.
Like, what's the logic in that?
Well, they're the best at making, again, battle management systems.
We don't need one.
We have all these battles.
Where?
I'm currently fighting my demons. And I think I really need a battle management system with the Iron Fist.
I need... What I really need is to just get hit with an iron fist to defeat my demons.
Yeah, listen, my demons aren't going away, and they're monstrous. And
they're monstrous. I need a battle management system.
I need them droned.
I need a. I'm holding out for a battle management system till the end of the night. It's got to be strong, and it's got to be fast, and it's got to have a fist made of iron.
Fully automated delivery method.
And a fully automated delivery method. I want, Jesus Christ. All right. Yeah, sure. Let's buy from them again. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, they're just one, probably the biggest name, but one of a few military companies in Israel that Australia works with.
Of course.
The other big name popping up in the news right now is Rafael.
Nadal?
Yeah. So he runs an Israeli, it's an Israeli missile company. And Australia signed a 15-year contract with.
Fuck off. These big fucking contracts piss me off.
Yeah.
You should not be allowed to sign. Like, in government, you should only be allowed to sign a contract that's, like, as valid as the length of your, like, term.
Yeah, but then how do you build generational infrastructural
you don't.
Battle management
We don't
system?
Need it. You don't need it.
Yeah, if it takes 2 years... It's like
yeah,
cricket.
If you can do it in 2 years, of course.
If you can do it in 2 years, you can do it. Any longer than that, get the fuck out of here.
Exactly.
Get
either
the fuck
either
out
the
of
next
here.
Government has to agree to sign on and like an extension to like whatever deal you've made, or it's just abandoned.
Yeah.
It's simply abandoned.
Listen, we got a team.
Clearly,
option.
If the other team decided we didn't need it, then it's like, well, fuck, maybe we didn't.
Maybe
I don't
we
know.
Didn't need it.
When you get in again, you can like fire it up again or whatever. I don't care.
Well, you know, okay, so the contract was signed for $50 million, right? Mm. And then they actually did change it in October of 2024. They bumped it up to $108 million.
Jesus.
To get more missiles.
Because that was really important. God, I'm going to be so annoyed when we go to war with China. I'm going to be so fucking annoyed.
I think it's going to be like the 2032 Olympics. Not going to happen. Those two things have the same probability of occurring.
That's true. That is actually very true.
Anyway, so Rafael was present, not Nadal, at a weapons conference in Perth.
Oh, the Ninja Turtle?
Yeah, the Ninja Turtle.
Got it.
He was at this weapons conference showing off his Psy or whatever it is he has.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, and Green Senator David Shoebridge was there. He described their booth as using snuff videos as a sales pitch. I've got
Jesus.
His tweet for you.
Okay. Israeli arms manufacturers use the fact that they have tested their weapons on Palestinians as a sales pitch. I saw this last year at a defense conference in Perth. Rafael was selling to the Australian government by showing images of Israeli attacks in Gaza, Yemen, and Lebanon.
Few people know that Australia has one of the most secretive and unaccountable weapons export systems in the world.
Which is heinous. That's heinous.
Yeah, that's just what's going on. Like, Richard Marles goes to these events and is like, wow,
it's like,
amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
There was you really eviscerated that small village.
You know, it's like, wow, that kid's definitely not growing
up.
That
hospital was leveled in less than 3 seconds.
So there was a great deal of... Goodness me, we're being silenced. There was a great deal of argument about this at the time, with the government / company accusing David Shoebridge of misinformation and fueling division because of, you know, technicalities of where Australia is on the killing machine supply chain. They were like, so... The defense at that point was like, we're not selling missiles to them. We're buying missiles from them. And so you're doing misinformation.
It's different.
It's different. It's really different. It's like, what are they going to do with the money you give them for the missiles? It's like, that's not our business.
Yeah, that's not my problem. I've bought missiles.
There was a article I saw this morning in The Guardian, actually, not to date the episode, but about a UAE arms manufacturer that's pretty present in Australia right now at some conferences and stuff.
Mm.
But anyway, so the machinery of the Australian government is fully tied to the success of some of the most evil companies in the world. And they do this by siphoning away money from citizens' paychecks and giving them to, again from the list, ExxonMobil.
ExxonMobil Rewards Plus app.
Dropbox.
Dropbox is looking.
Kellogg's.
Kellogg's Cornflakes.
And this isn't a joke. United Health. Garen's gasping. If you don't remember that
Kieran,
name,
you're not saying anything.
You're not saying anything, Tony.
Oh, you mean my boy Luigi's nemesis? Oh,
yeah, the company that got Brian Thompson's CEO blow-blowed in the street.
Bang, bada, bang.
Bang, bada, banged in the street.
And I must say, we love Luigi Mangione. Handsome man.
If he did it.
He was right to do it if he did it. If he did it, but he was actually with me that day, so, you know, it doesn't matter.
He was actually on the pod.
Yeah, he was on the pod. You can go back and check the episodes.
Yeah, we were talking about, funnily enough, the Future Fund.
Yeah, we were. So, you know, he didn't do it. But that's like, that's...
Yeah, you know.
Run that list through for me again. We had ExxonMobil. We had Kellogg's in there.
We had Kellogg's. We had Dropbox. And then United Health.
That's so stupid.
Let me scroll down the big list. I'll see Smith's. Smith's Group is on the list.
Of course.
Smith's Group's on the list. Ford and Microsoft and Whirlpool and Nike. Oh, what if our Lululemon investments are affected by our Nike investments?
Damn, I guess we'll just have to invest in, what are the fucking...
Apple.
Kukai, I don't care.
Yeah, we'll invest in Kukai.
Yeah. Kukai, hey, are you investing in Mecca?
Mecca may be on this. No, I would have mentioned it. I would have checked for
Mecca. Fair.
Anyway, so...
That's so fucking stupid. I actually am not, like... I'm actually not mentally coping with the list of things that we invest in as a country. That's so laughable.
Isn't it very
That's
funny?
That's so fucking stupid.
Kellogg's,
you're telling me,
Domino's.
You are telling me we are investing in pizzas at the same time we are investing in weapons.
Yeah.
At the same time we are investing in, like, a Photoshop.
Yes.
Like, can you actually fuck off? And we're investing in little tights as well.
Little tights.
For the girlies.
We got little fucking dolls and little tights.
We got little fucking dolls and little fucking tights and little fucking missiles and little fucking pizzas.
We got these little fucking pizzas. And
sick
we got
of this shit.
Little fucking, let me go to page 7. 7's a lucky page.
Come on, what do we got?
What do we got on 7? CrowdStrike Holdings, Netflix. I said Netflix. Roblox.
What? You can't tell me we're investing in Roblox.
Well, I don't have to tell you, but we have invested $1 million in Roblox.
A million in Roblox.
We got a million in
Wait,
Roblox.
Wait, hang on. Are we investing in the social medias?
Oh, God.
Because wondering, because there was that whole thing about Roblox, like, not being... included in the social media ban.
Yeah, Meta Platforms, $256 million.
There we fucking go.
So we got investments.
We invested in TikTok?
Could we have?
I don't know.
I don't know if because TikTok, who owns ByteDance?
That's the Chinese company that owns it, I think.
So I think we... I don't think, because of how its ownership structure works,
that we could have invested in it. Devastating. Has it been purchased by someone yet?
I don't know.
US President Donald Trump says Chinese President Xi Jinping has agreed to a deal on American ownership of TikTok.
And
it doesn't matter.
There's like rules on
anyway.
Yeah. You're on Reels.
I'm on Reels now. I've embraced myself as a in my 30s person. I'll look at Reels on my lunch break and be like,
oh, Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, we're invested in Dr. Pepper.
Never apologize for seeing the good doctor.
Anyway, so I remember a few weeks ago at my weird job running, you know, Bootleg Family Feud.
Hell yeah.
We had a question along the lines of name somebody who was assassinated. Hey, name somebody who was assassinated.
Oh, like Lincoln?
Normal answer. So this guy, as a follow-up actually, when was the most recent Australian political assassination?
Most recent Australian political assassination?
Yeah. There have been 4.
Ooh.
Not including Harold Holt.
Damn it. There was a guy, the guy that Clive walked down the beach with, the really unfavorable guy. Did they try and kill him?
No. I don't think so.
Oh, the not Harold. Oh, and another one. The opposition leader that was opposition leader at the time, Harold Holt, died. They tried to assassinate him, and then that's why they were like, Harold, you have to have security. And Harold's like, yeah, but not on the weekend. And then he, like,
That's
swims
right.
out to sea on the weekend and dies.
But he, yeah, as well as...
Anyway, no, I have no idea who the most recent...
No, I mean, even when the most recent was.
50s?
98.
Whoa.
94 for someone in office, John Newman, and then Frank Arkell, who was assassinated out of office after.
Wait, for what reason? What happened? Who are these men?
Different episode. So everybody.
Oh, fuck. All right, I'm keen.
I'm doing this bootleg Family Feud thing, and the question is like, yeah, name someone who's been assassinated, and this older white dude, he gets a glint of recognition in his eye, and he's like, hey, wasn't there like a doctor who was assassinated in the street by a lone gunman?
Oh no.
So that's basically what his wife sounded like, and that's she so looked funny. Mortified, and she's like, honey, no, he wasn't a doctor. He ran a health insurance company. And he's nodding along, and he's like, yeah, terrible stuff. People were celebrating.
Wife is just like, I've seen the photos of the alleged gunman, sweetie. We have a different opinion in this household, we think differently.
Well, that's the thing. Alongside, in general, being dead shits and illiterate dead shits at that, the Australian man is extremely ready to voice his wrong, stupid opinion.
Yes.
And then when his wife is like, you're wrong, he's like, yep, exactly, as I said.
That is genuinely such an Australian man thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially if you're like a cis heterosexual man in a relationship with a woman that you don't respect.
No.
Like, she'll be trying her best to help you out. She's like, I don't want you to make a fucking fool of yourself because you make a fool of all of us.
Yeah.
Right? We're a unit here.
Your actions reflect me and I regret that every day.
Exactly. And then they'll just say some fucking shit and it'll be like, no, honey, actually the sky is blue, actually. And it's like, yeah, well, that's what I said. I said it was like, you know, pink and blue. And it's just what I've said as well. Don't lecture me, woman.
Don't lecture me, woman.
It's like, oh, sorry, sweetheart.
Yeah, they're like, they've already become AI chatbots. Australian men just talk like AI chatbots. I've seen it in action, as you've said.
Yeah.
Just steamroll through.
Absolute hallucinations and then go like, well, that's what I said anyway.
All right, let's move on to some goons.
All right.
The Lowy Institute. We've spoken about them before.
We love the Lowy Institute.
They're a company that weaponizes the fact that Australian men don't know anything to generate useful data to support whatever ghoulish cause they can justify.
Perfect.
So it was founded by and named for Frank Lowy, a literal Israeli soldier during the Nakba, and also one of the Westfield guys.
Yay.
There's four Lowys on the board of the Lowy Institute, as well as David Gonski of the Gonski Report.
God damn it.
The Israel Lobby, ANZ.
Of course.
Coca-Cola.
All right.
And the board of the Future Fund.
Yeah.
And I think the Archibald Prize? I think Gonski was Archibald for a while. Anyway,
possibly, yeah.
There's some other rich people on this, heavy hitters. And the Lowy Institute does these surveys about how Australians feel about shit. We spoke about it in a Patreon episode once.
Yes.
These are usually taken fairly uncritically by mainstream publications. They're like, the Lowy Institute's found that Australians like their coffee with milk. Because they're, you know, laundered as neutral experts. One of my favorite stupid things they do is the feelings thermometer, where they ask people to rate how they feel about another country and their people. And for some reason, it's a temperature. I've got the full text of the question here for you.
Damn, okay, let's see. All right, here we go. The feelings thermometer. Please rate your feelings towards some countries and territories with 100 meaning a very warm, favorable feeling, 0 meaning a very cold, unfavorable feeling, and 50 meaning not particularly warm or cold. You can use any number from 0 to 100. The higher the number, the more favorable your feelings are towards that country or territory. If you have no opinion or have never heard of that country or territory, please say so.
Isn't that so fast?
That's so fucking, like, what are you talking? And what are the results we have here?
So
New Zealand, obviously, is apparently the highest ranked. And
yes.
North Korea, the lowest.
Yes. I've got a chart with some longitudinal results of some countries of interest coming up.
Oh, hell
up.
Yes. I'm so excited.
But I wanted to highlight how, I guess, anodyne and stupid this is.
Yeah, it's fucking dumb.
It's so consultancy-brained. To think that this is something.
Yes.
You know, because it doesn't make any sense, especially given how little Australians know about anything.
Of course. And I think maybe that is the point of it, right? Like, this is a litmus test for idiots.
Yeah.
And a way of being able to determine, okay, what does this dumb country know about all these other countries? Like, this country we've suggested, like, for example, Russia. Like,
yes.
What do idiots here know about Russia? And if they're in general just like, Russia bad. And it's like, okay, cool. So we can just push whatever Russia bad we want with like very little public outcry. Because it's like, okay, dipshits here have no idea. They have no clue.
No, so, like, absolutely no clue. I can't overstate this.
Yeah, like, they're like, oh,
they can't read. Easy. It's not that they're not reading. It's that they can't read.
Correct.
I think it's also interesting. I think a more interesting question is...
Tell me what the more interesting question is.
Who the Lowies have stopped asking about. Ooh. And who they start asking about and Ooh. Stuff. Because obviously they don't ask about every country.
No, no.
And I've picked a few countries of interest to show the numbers that the Institute's got over time. For ease of readability, I've slightly altered one of the country's flags to match its color on the chart.
Okay. Look at this graph! All right. Oh, no.
So we've got, what have I got here?
Okay, so we've got New Zealand.
Oh, sorry, for the listener, what is the chart?
Oh, apologies. Yes, the chart. So it appears to be a bar chart.
That is not, you know what? It's a line
a
chart.
And point. It's a point and dot line chart, and it has got a series of dot point lines that give us a tail. Almost like, it looks like... a platformer for a video
All
game.
Right.
It looks like you could ride a bike up and down some of these lines. Some of these lines, you could have a nice little trick on them, and other ones are just a little bump, as it were.
I've got a line chart. I've just showing the warmth that Australians feel on average to six countries of interest from 2007 to 2025. And
that's what I said, woman. Don't lecture me.
And from this chart, what do you see?
Okay. So I can see there's some interesting, there's some consistency across some of the, I'll say the countries first. So we have New Zealand, China, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, the great Satan, which is America, and Satan Minor, which is Israel.
You know. Just, like, I wanted to be clear for anyone who's reading this.
And you're right to say it. Okay, so let's see what we've got here. So the top line, I am presuming, is New Zealand.
Yes.
So back in 2007, we had them ranked at about 81, and in 2025, 85. So very little has changed. There's been almost no, like, they haven't gone below 80 since we started, like, recording.
They're consistently
this.
The most popular.
Yeah, everybody likes New Zealand here because they're, like, right next door, you know?
Yeah. At the bottom, you'll see Australia's most hated country, which is apparently...
North Korea?
Yeah, the country we feel coldest about is North Korea. It went from...
We don't know anything about them. That's the thing.
And it's like... So the respondents, remember, they're people who believe that doctors are being shot in the streets in America and leftists are celebrating it with radicals by lighting bonfires, right? I don't think that person knows anything about North Korea. And I don't think what they know about North Korea has changed since 2006.
No, and yet they started out at 43 with North Korea in 2006 and then 2025 we're at 16.
Yeah, it's like got three times worse. Why? Like what has happened to make it worse?
Is it because North Korea is in the news more?
Is it in the news more?
Well, I imagine, you know what? Not enough that this makes full sense.
It feels like it's always like every year, a few times a year, some crazy shit is told to us about North Korea.
Yeah.
And that hasn't got more, like, it's just always, but yeah, it's got consistently worse, apparently.
Yeah.
It can't have anything to do with actual North Korea. I'm positing it also reflects, like, more rabid nationalism. When people are perceiving Australia as worse, they need to perceive other countries as even more worse.
Yes.
To justify why Australia, like, it's like, oh, you know, we're...
Oh, well, it's not North Korea.
It's not North... Exactly.
Yeah. China's is a crazy one.
Yeah. China's is probably the one that shows the most movement.
Yes, absolutely. So it looks like we are hovering around 60, just above 60 for China from 2006 through till, what is that, 2018?
Yeah.
And then there is a swift dive, funnily enough, over the pandemic period, resulting in our lowest for China in 2021 at what looks to be about like under 40, like maybe like 38 or something, which is crazy, resulting in a 2025 score of 37.
Yeah. And Russia's is about, like, we don't have it on the chart, but Russia's got about the same shape as well.
That also makes sense to me. America's is what, the peak was 2015?
Yeah. Right before, like, the last year of Obama, I guess.
Yeah.
And the furthest away since 2000 from a big crisis, it's 7 years after the financial crash and 5 years before COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes complete sense. And we're finishing out in 2025 with America at, like, 50.
yeah, America's dipped a little bit under Trump. And, not a lot, I guess, but yeah.
And here's two interesting things to note about the two that I haven't mentioned yet, that being Saudi Arabia and Israel, is that they do not have the full spectrum of results available here.
Yeah, they stopped asking about them both.
Yeah, so it seems like they started asking about Saudi Arabia in, what is that, 2018, yep. 2019, and 2020. They asked about Saudi Arabia, and, you know, the results are kind of like around 40. And Israel, looks like we were asking about Israel. They were asking about Israel from 2006 through till 2020. And then it seems like the opinion on Israel has been silenced. We don't want to know what people are thinking about Israel right now because we know it's not good.
Well, I think that's it, right?
Yeah, they're like, oh, fuck, we can't actually have the stats for that.
Because, like, it doesn't make sense not to ask about Israel because Frank lives there.
Yeah.
It's important. It's in the news. People know about it. But we do have...
Well, this way they can very much be like, oh, well, you know, like, we don't have any data that says that people don't like Israel or anything. Like, so, you know, blah, blah, blah.
That's exactly right. And they're quite ideological about why they do that. There's this article by some dickhead named Allen for the Lowy Institute in November of 2023. You'll notice Allen. A month after, you know. Yeah. The article's titled, Israel Fights Terror with One Arm Tied Behind Its Back.
Hmm. Even allowing for casualty inflation, there is no doubt that many...
Nah, that doesn't feel right.
It's going to be hard as well. Though. Yeah. It's a big quote.
I was like, oh, no, I can't hold it for that long. All right, so...
Even allowing for casualty inflation, there is no doubt that many thousands of innocent Palestinians have been killed. Unfortunately, wars kill innocents, which is why every effort must be made to prevent them. To put Palestinian deaths into perspective... 432,093 civilians are thought to have died violent deaths in wars throughout the first 20 years of this century. But formulaic calculations take no account of the reality that Hamas is invested in increasing Palestinian civilian casualties to paint Israel as the aggressor and to create international sympathy for its cause. That's why it locates military positions and command centres in hospitals, mosques and schools, and prevents civilians from leaving combat zones. Hostage-taking, information warfare, and the use of mosques and civil infrastructure to shield military command posts are central to Hamas's strategy. This aims to counter Israel's superior military strengths by winning the crucial battle for hearts and minds. Not only those of the Arab street, but also the citizens of Israel's supporter states.
Mm.
Wah, wah.
Fucking, I feel like kind of sick when I read that.
Yeah.
Like what he's saying is, you know, let me know when you got 400,000 dead civilians.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they're probably at that now.
You know.
But that's, I think, instructive.
Good, we need more bodies.
Well, that's instructive as to why the Lowy Institute, for instance, doesn't ask people what they feel about Israel.
Well, yeah, because it's like, and I think that's interesting on two accounts. I think it's interesting that they're not asking because they fear a negative result when, as we've already spoken about, most Australians are fucking idiots that don't know anything.
Yeah.
I know plenty of people who are like, who have no idea about Israel and Palestine. Like,
no.
They don't know shit about it, which is crazy. It's been like, it's been years of this.
Well, I think what you can see from the, for instance, the North Korea line, right? Where it's just really low for no real reason.
Yeah.
Is that Australians have pretty controlled opinions about some things, like North Korea, like Russia, perhaps.
I guess it's one of those things where you use it in like a colloquialism so people will hear about it that way. Like, oh, bloody, you know, the boss man's got all these rules. What are we living in, North Korea?
Exactly. You know about, because they've been portrayed funnily and stuff. And
yeah.
Perhaps because there's been less ability for like, I don't know, North Korean Australians to say shit.
Because
that's not as much of a thing. Where it's like, Australians don't have as controlled an opinion about Israel.
Yeah, that's true.
Because a bunch of them are just, you know, Nazis. And then a bunch of Australians also, like, are aware of what's happening over there. No Lebanese or Palestinian people have, you know, have deep friendships with them. But, yeah, the Lowy Institute, you know, they've stopped asking about Israel because I think one of the things that Mark Liebler, the you know, the evil man we talked about a few weeks ago
says
is that you never run a poll unless you know what the answer is.
Yeah, because you don't want to get a fucking surprise.
Exactly. And
you just want to prove a point.
That also goes on to, like, if you know the answer is bad, you don't run the poll.
Yeah.
At some point, I think they're going to ask, and it's going to be extremely low, and they're going to perhaps use that to justify, like, there's increased anti-Semitism in Australia.
Yes, absolutely. It'll be like, oh, people hate Jews. And it's like, no, people hate Israel. It's different.
Exactly. But anyway, Saudi Arabia also on the chart, you'll notice they stopped. They only asked for a few years. And that's pretty weird, right?
Yes.
Like, the general reportage about the evolving Saudi Arabia, which is how they describe Saudi Arabia, is noticeably friendlier than what they have to say about, like, Iran, who they always ask about in the temperature survey.
Mm.
I'm pretty confident in saying that Australians reflexively don't like Saudi Arabia.
Well, we've been told Arab nations are scary and bad.
Well, I think across the political spectrum, Australians don't like Saudi Arabia. Because you could be Islamophobic and racist, or you could be concerned about, like, slavery and human rights violations and still hate Saudi Arabia. You can be a misogynist or a feminist and still hate Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's true, actually. That's crazy. But, you know, if you're in business, you probably love them.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, depends what business. If you're in the business of policing Canberra's roads, here's what the Sydney Morning Herald had to say in 2016.
Oh, God, okay. The Saudis are Canberra's worst-behaved diplomats, with more than 550 fines outstanding for speeding, running red lights, and parking where they please around the city, ACT government data reveals. Saudi Arabian diplomats in Canberra have clocked up more than 140,000 in traffic fines, hooning around the capital in their official cars, but authorities are powerless to make the Saudis pay. DFAT Chief of Protocol Chris Kanan, DFAT Chief of Protocol Chris Kanan said he was not happy about the exploits of the Saudis.
Not happy.
I'm not happy about these Saudi exploits. I'll tell you what.
Well, so Chris Kanan, he's back at DFAT now, but he had a three-year stint as the ambassador to...
Is it Saudi Arabia?
No, next guess.
Is it Israel?
Yes. But yeah, like, definitely I've met some fucking shithouse Saudi students and diplomats back when we lived in Canberra.
For sure.
Like, that was a thing.
And I think that's also just as much like an outcome of the fact that they're like rich.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. Like most, like when you are meeting a lot of like international students, particularly like at universities and stuff mainly, or like young international people in Canberra, they probably have diplomat family members and also are probably, like, insanely wealthy.
Yeah, they're like, at least there is probably pretty rich.
Yeah, like, there's a ridiculousness to it where you're like, damn, that's crazy.
Exactly. And, like, you're wealthy in a place where wealth disparity means you can have servants.
Yes.
You know, where, like, you've managed to come to a place where... I knew a few people when I worked at Mecca who were like, I used to live in, you know, Dubai or Saudi or whatever. It's like, oh, you know, I miss... Like, I hate having to do, like... chores like cooking and cleaning and stuff. I just got so used to not doing it. So yeah, that's why you're going over there. You want slaves. You want servants.
You simply have like
And people who have servants become toxic.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think that's probably awkward for the Lowy Institute at the Australian Center and stuff, who would probably prefer that we reserve that kind of racism for Afghanistan or China, Iran or Palestine.
Yeah, the right? Enemy. Like,
exactly. Because Saudi Arabia is Australia's critical mineral path to the future.
What?
Gina Reinhart's already opening up mines there. And Macquarie Bank is working with Saudi Arabia's much bigger future fund to invest in things.
Of course.
The Saudis are our guys, fam.
Yes. And, in the club wheel, fam.
In the club wheel, fam. We have to be comfortable working with them in the future. We can't have them knowing that they're detested for things like the subjugation of women and doing 9/11 and destroying Yemen. With Australia's help. All right, so let's talk about Yemen for a sec. Jimmy Carr made a joke at the recent Riyadh Comedy Festival.
Oh, yeah, of course, the Riyadh Comedy Festival.
And he made a joke about what's going on in Yemen in the context of a riff about euthanasia.
What?
Here's the joke.
Okay, sorry, let me get my Jimmy Carr on. We wouldn't let a dog live like this. And yet people are allowed to go on living in what can only be described as Yemen.
Yeah, it's,
I'm Jimmy Carr.
That's Jimmy Carr. I'll fucking beat this motherfucker in the streets. I swear to God. Come around to my place, James Anthony Patrick Carr. You know,
come here, Jimmy Carr, and I'll hit you with my Jimny Carr.
I'll drive my fucking knee into your face in your Jimmy fucking face.
Your Jimmy fucking face. You like the Iron Fist?
Fucking bloated, alcohol retentive Jimmy fucking face. Oh, fucking Iron Fist. You, I'll give you double dyslexia, motherfucker. I'm going to make you read the Bible to your father backwards. He has a bad relationship with his father.
Damn.
I looked up his Wikipedia to find things to hurt him about. He's a neuro-linguistic programming guy, which is an old enemy of mine. Jimmy Carr, I hate this guy. He's the animating force of sexually repressed British violence.
Yeah.
They don't get to do this shit, but they all want to. They all want to be subjugating the Yemenis.
Yeah.
Come to Fortitude Valley, motherfucker. I'll cut your dick off. To an ibis. Anyway, Yemen. So the current phase of the relationship between Yemen and Saudi is officially referred to as the Saudi-led intervention, which we know means invasion.
Yes.
An article by a guy named Brecht Jonkers.
Sorry.
It's a good article as well.
Mr. Jonkers?
Mr. Jonkers. Brecht Jonkers.
Mr. Jonkers, please.
On Crescent International. He framed this as the latest stage in a grinding, more than century-long colonial project by British and Saudi imperialists to control Yemen, making specific mention to all the arable land and the importance of the Bab al-Mandab Strait, which I'm told means something like the Gate of Tears or, sexier, the Portal to Lamentation. So Damn. Here's that strait.
Okay, let's see. Okay. All right, so it's the other end of, like, the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Opposite, like, so you got the Suez Canal on one that links the Red Sea to the Mediterranean, and then Bab el-Mandeb links the Red Sea to the Gulf of Aden.
Yeah, which goes to the Arabian Sea, which goes to the Indian Ocean.
Gotcha.
So Bab el-Mandeb is a little bit of ocean between the tip of the Arabian Peninsula and the African continent.
Mm.
One end of it is the southwestern or bottom left corner of Yemen. And the other end of it is the country of Djibouti.
Yes.
It's about 25 kilometers across. Damn. And control of this strait is super important for, say, Australia to receive minerals mined in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that'd be it.
Because for what it's worth, the map that I've got on the screen right now also highlights the Strait of Hormuz, which has a similar situation with Iran, where Saudi has coast in the Persian Gulf, but to get to the Arabian Sea and thus to the Indian Ocean and Australia and Asia and stuff, you have to go through the Strait of Hormuz, which one side of it is Iranian control.
Yes.
And that comes up a lot. If there's some resistance to the Saudis in Yemen, say by some Houthis, they can interfere with boats going through the strait, given you pretty much have to go through the strait to get to the Suez Canal from the south.
Yeah.
Because the Persian Gulf doesn't link all the way up to the Mediterranean.
No, so it really is like a massive choke point, exactly, like in terms of like global trade.
When that area becomes hot, they'll often start shipping things around Africa again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gets that much cheaper or whatever. So hilariously, in the first year of the invasion, the Saudi invasion in Yemen, an Australian is killed.
What?
So the United Arab Emirates, so one of the countries in the coalition with Saudi, hired Blackwater to manage the invasion.
Of course.
And Blackwater hired an Australian guy named Philip to manage some Colombian mercenaries.
Not Philip.
Philip got fucking killed in the fighting pretty early on.
Yeah, he was filled.
he was filled. Yeah, and they put his body in a landfill. So in 2017, a couple of years into this brutal intervention of Yemen, Australia signed a deal to give the Saudis ambiguous military equipment to create high-tech manufacturing jobs and opportunities for Australian businesses.
Mm.
In fact, while Saudi forces were preventing food and aid from reaching more than 7 million people in Yemen, does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
The Australian government approved 4 different military licenses, being criticized by Amnesty International for not even saying what they were for. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
In response to a joint naval training exercise between Australia and Saudi Arabia in the Red Sea in 2017.
Why were they doing a joint military exercise in the Red Sea in 2017?
I don't know. You'd have to ask then Defense Minister Maurice Payne, who did not reply to a question asking her to condemn the blockade of Yemen. She said that she'd have to ask the Foreign Affairs Minister before doing anything like condemning starvation.
Well, yeah, she's really busy cleaning a couch from the rape that happened there.
Yeah. Was that Maurice Payne?
I think it was Maurice Payne.
Are you talking about Bruce Lerman?
Yeah. Was that Maurice Payne as well? How is Maurice Payne involved in this? I feel like she is.
I don't think it's Maurice Payne, but let me check. Bruce Lerman. Yeah, I don't think it was Maurice Payne.
Damn. What was she in the news for at the same time then?
Linda Reynolds is the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
Maurice Payne, she's like in general fairly evil. I mean, she was Minister for Defense and Minister for Foreign Affairs and things like that. She's resigned.
She was in there. She was mentioned because she was scared about. She was like, oh, no, I'm worried that Linda Reynolds won't do very well because of all of this scandal or whatever. I'm scared for her health.
Right. So just like a apologist. Mm. Anyway, she said that Australia is in no way involved in the enforcement of any blockade on Yemen. You know, despite selling weapons to the people doing the blockade, you know, like it's just this technicality shit where it's ridiculous. Like, no, we're further up the supply chain.
Ridiculous shit.
So on the topic of weapons, a couple of years later in 2019, the ABC revealed that the Australian government was giving tens of millions of dollars to a Canberra-based weapons company, Electro-Optic Systems.
Oh, great.
Granting them a license to export 500 of their remote-controlled tanks to war crime-accused Saudi Arabia. As well as a bunch to the United Arab Emirates.
Of course.
So we're going to play out this conversation between Richard Di Natale, then Green Senator, and Tom Hamilton, currently the Chief of Intelligence at Defense.
Hell yeah.
Which sounds like a title that a Donald Trump-like figure would give himself, but you it know? Is his actual position. He's the Chief of Intelligence. So I'm going to be Richard and you're going to be Tom.
Got it.
Can you state categorically that those weapons will not be used in Yemen?
Senator, I can state categorically that our assessment process is followed for each and every permit, and that includes an assessment of the overriding risk that they will be used to commit human rights abuses.
I'm asking a specific question.
Senator, if we assessed that they would be used to commit human rights abuses, we would not approve the permit.
Will they be used in Yemen?
Senator, I refer you to our process. We take a very robust and vigorous...
I'm not interested in the process. I'm interested in an answer as to whether these weapons will be used in the conflict in Yemen. So you can't give me a no?
Senator, no, I'm giving you an answer around the process that we follow to assess.
I don't want an answer on the process. I want an answer on whether these weapons will be used in Yemen.
Senator, I refer you to my answer to your earlier question.
If I had any confidence in your answer, you would be simply be able to say, no, these weapons will not be used in the conflict in Yemen, but you refuse to say that. Isn't that so frustrating?
That's fucking crazy. We've made an assessment. We don't assess that they could possibly be theoretically used for war crimes or human rights abuses based on our assessment.
Just this fucking, like, we haven't assessed that they would be. It's like, so, but like, everyone knows they will be.
But we haven't done the reporting or the documentation to investigate that potential outcome. And so at this time, we do have to say that such an outcome is not possible.
They may as well fucking said that.
Yeah.
Means as much. Like, useless people. The article that I was referring to notes that Christopher Pine, the treasurer at that time, traveled to Saudi with the CEO of Electro-Optic Systems to secure the deal.
Oh, fucking course.
EOS is one of those vaunted public-private partnerships that crosses party lines.
That shit makes me sick.
Yeah, it's gonna be worse. So by 2021, a Freedom of Information request found that a total of 23 export contracts had been approved and signed between Australia and Saudi Arabia since the start of the invasion.
Of course.
23. And a further 80 with the United Arab Emirates.
80?
With a measly 3 being denied for those two countries in that time.
Wow. What could we possibly have denied?
Yeah, I don't know.
Were they not paying enough? Like,
I have to imagine it's that. Yeah. It's that, or it wasn't enough, like, long enough contract or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, only 3 times did Australia go, like, maybe we shouldn't give the psychos their violence toys.
You know?
And that was 3 too many, it seems, because the next year, among United Nations condemnations, Australia approved 17 permits for export to the Saudis, and then 21 the year after that.
What the fuck?
As the weapons flow in, a number of them are managing to siphon their way out. In Sudan, the Rapid Support Forces, one of the parties in an ongoing civil war, has been found to be using British and UAE-made weapons. Given the aforementioned Electro-Optical Systems was partnered with an Emirati weapons company to make products from their remote weapon system family, I imagine some Australian bombs will be landing on Sudanese hospitals in the near future.
Of course.
Australians are also rushing over to build Saudi Arabia's long-term future. The NEOM project. Remember the big line in the desert?
Oh, the line! Oh, God, how I feel about the line.
So it's not clear if NEOM's going to, like, happen. But a lot of Australians have been collecting a nice paycheck from Mohammed bin Salman to dream up new ways to draw a line in the sand.
Oh, no.
A fun article from Danielle Said at Crikey went through all the prominent Australians in big NEOM roles, including a former MP, a former chief of staff, and a former deputy premier, along with a number of high-level public servants. The executives from Telstra, Deloitte, and Twitter Australia are heading up NEOM departments.
Damn, okay.
The former chair of Gender Equity Victoria is currently the executive director of NEOM Land Department.
What the fuck?
It's starting to remind me of the Overland Telegraph cable.
That's so goofy.
So follow the train back to Electro-Optic Systems, the company that serves as one of the major weapons conduits. David Shoebridge, the Green senator from earlier, describes this dodgy situation as the impact of AUKUS Pillar 2, the removal of any controls for weapons transfers between the United States, Australia, and anywhere.
Interesting.
A fundamental part of that is the public-private partnership, which Albo loves, and a dead Italian earlier might have described as the merging of state and corporate power.
God damn it.
So, looking down the list of who works at EOS, you'll find a smattering of eyebrow-raising figures. First to me was Director Kate Lundy, who was a senator for the ACT. That is our senator.
Yeah.
For about 20 years.
Fuck.
While we were there.
Fuck.
Funnily enough, she was Minister for Sport in the second Gillard ministry.
Right.
She then became the ACT government defense industry advocate.
Mm.
And while in that role in 2019, she gave us this wonderful quote about what corruption looks like in practice.
As a defense industry advocate, I see myself as a connector, knowing the right people, the right organizations that your business needs to talk to and communicate with.
That's just corruption.
Yeah.
That's just describing how corruption works.
What I do see myself is I'm a connector. I know a lot of people and have my fingers in a lot of pies, and I can connect you with those people and you can do whatever deals and business required. From like a favoritism, nepotism standpoint, I think.
Yeah.
Corruptly.
And my friends.
I would call myself a corrupter.
I'll call myself like an evil party planner.
Yeah, damn.
I imagine one of those right people to know was Gary Hounsell, who was appointed chair of Electro-Optic Systems around the same time he was appointed chair of the Commonwealth Superannuation Corporation.
Oh, fuck off.
Gary just sits on chairs everywhere.
Motherfucker.
The lazy fuck.
Yeah, get a job.
Well, it's not good enough that he's also chairman of Hello World Travel.
Oh my god, bro, get a job. Stop being like, oh, I'm just going to sit on chairs all day.
So he was chair of Meyer and Spotless before as well.
Bro,
so
get fucked. A job.
Gary became,
be employed.
Gary became chair after the previous chair, Peter Leahy. Leahy? That one, you know, yeah. Peter Lee retired. Peter had spent his previous 6 years before being at AOS being chief of the Australian Army.
Why not?
Don't worry though, EOS still has the old chief of the Air Force, Jeff Brown, on their books.
Thank God.
There is a fiction that we are asked to believe that previously formed relationships, personal or professional, have no impact on how somebody acts in public life. That the chief of the Army and Air Force, former MPs and senators, can all be associated with a weapons company, a company that, although it has deep and expensive business relationships with countries currently committing mass murder and genocide, isn't in violation of arms trade agreements due to legalistic technicalities. And there's a further fiction embedded in the idea that the sin of what's happening is the relationship between Australia and a country committing human rights violations, a country which Australia should not be involving itself with. But that's not true either. Australia is a country built on and sustained by corporate corruption and human rights abuses, many of which have neat little mirrors to what happens and happened and will happen in the Gulf states.
Yeah.
I think the most disgusting Australian involved with the project in Saudi Arabia, the NEOM project, is Wayne Borg, former Fox Studios Australia director who went over to run media for NEOM. He got fired after he called one of his staff a black shit.
Oh my god.
And then referred to the ensuing HR nightmare as that fucking episode I had with that black bitch.
Oh my god.
So NEOM replaced him with the guy who used to run the Sydney Opera House. So, like, someone more classy, I guess. Someone who's not going to do that. I think, simple as that. To top it off.
What the fuck?
It's an Australian who's in charge of the sports part of Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund, their future fund.
Mm.
Because we're a sports country in the desert that does nuclear submarines, and they're a sports country in the desert that needs nuclear submarines.
A beautiful match made in heaven.
We're both even preparing for major sporting events in the 2030s, the 2032 Queensland Olympics and the 2034 Saudi Arabia Soccer World Cup. For our last little slide, I have some exciting economics for you all. It's just the import and exports of Australia and Saudi Arabia split by the category of commodity, and you're going to guess which one is which.
Oh, okay. Right.
This is imports.
All right. Imports. Okay, so what do we got? Let me read out what our top ones in each category are.
Yeah, I've got box charts up for Kieran, which shows the big imports that these two countries have.
Okay, so for country one, our top imports are vehicles other than railway and tramway with 15%, machinery, nuclear reactors at 14%, mineral fuels, oils, distillation products at 13%, and electrical or electronic equipment at 11%. Now, country two, we have machinery, nuclear reactors and boilers at 14%, vehicles other than railway and tramway at 11%, electrical or electronic equipment at 11% also, and then minerals, fuels, oils, and distillation products at 5.7%. So these are the same top four. There's just a slight difference in the percentage weighting.
It's also the same.
That's so stupid.
Five is pharmaceutical for one. Six is pharmaceutical for the other.
Yeah.
And pearls and stuff are about 3% of each. Okay, so the top one, the first one's Australia. So damn. More of our imports just are vehicles.
Vehicles.
Saudi Arabia's importing more copper, I guess.
Yeah, right. Well, we import the exact, I guess, percentage-wise, the same in machinery, nuclear reactors, and boilers,
yeah.
Which is 14%.
We love some boilers.
And our electrical and electronic equipment is the same as well, at 11% for both.
Yeah, we're That's basically crazy. The same.
That's crazy. That's actually crazy.
You want to see the exports now?
Yeah. Gosh, what will it be? Let's see, our country one, at 73% of their exports, it's mineral fuels, oils, and distillation products. For country two, it's mineral fuels, oils, distillation products at 33%, and ores, slag, and ash at 28%. Damn. Okay, I'm going to say the bottom one is Australia, the second country is Australia, the first country is Saudi Arabia.
That's exactly correct.
Fuck yes.
You might remember that we do a lot of slag.
Yeah, slag for some fucking reason.
Yeah, we do a lot of
whatever
slag.
Whatever the fuck slag is.
But it's just like miney stuff.
Just shit.
Most of it. Yeah, we don't export as many plastics.
Yeah, fucking
idiots. Saudi is getting into plastic making.
Really into plastics, organic chemicals. Damn.
But yeah, so we, as you can see, it's the same country, Saudi, Australia. That's where we're going to dismount for this week, and we'll come back to the story at some point. Thank you all for joining us on this table-setting episode. That'll inform some future episodes about the relationship between Australia and the Arabian Peninsula, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE.
I'm really excited. This is really fascinating. This is like a fun comparison that I don't think many people would think about.
No.
I certainly hadn't thought about it. So I'm excited to see how this pans out.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about migrant labor.
Yay.
Sports.
Yay.
Maybe some fun cultural similarities and differences.
Hell yes.
You know, these countries, Saudi, Qatar, UAE, Bahrain, for what it's worth, Israel, these violent, extractive imperial states, they are our past.
Samesies.
And they are our future. Welcome to Saudi Australia.
Yes, Saudi Australia. Woo, 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 woo. I'm really interested to go into those aspects that you've mentioned as well. Like, I am kind of only really considering how similar the Gulf and Australia are in a lot of ways now.
Yeah.
That isn't something that had necessarily occurred to me prior to this, where I'm like, oh, you know, I could say like, oh, they've got big deserts in the middle. And the
I don't think that's it though. Like, but there's certain things that a country can do if there's a big desert in the middle.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of characteristics that will become apparent based on the geography of the place as well, and about what the land that this country is built on can produce, which in Saudi's case is oil, and Australia's case is oil.
And slag.
You know, and slag or whatever. Like, and I think that kind of extractive lifestyle, I suppose, if we can say that that's a lifestyle.
I think life way is a term
anthropologists
use sometimes.
Is obviously frames everything, right? If this is the way that this nation makes money, this is a priority.
Mm.
And it's also how we form relationships with other countries.
Mm.
Like, Saudi and Australia are really trying to, like, be buddies with the US at the moment because they're going to be the one purchasing most of this shit, right? Yeah,
exactly.
You know?
And it goes, I mean, from what David Shoebridge was saying about AUKUS is like, this is what's allowing for those weapons to go into that area that they go via Australia. Parts of it go via Australia that allow for technicalities in each case to be overcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's like what we spoke about during the, I think it was the PNG episode.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, we sent the military helicopters, but the guns weren't attached.
You know, it's shit like that.
Exactly. So we didn't send them a weapon.
At the time, somebody would have said, like, there were no guns on the helicopters. We were just sending them helicopters that are built to have guns on them.
Yes.
But if they went and got guns, that's not our problem.
Yeah, that's not my problem. We just send them the helicopters with gun holes where guns could fit. But, you know, we didn't send them the guns.
You have to either be saying that you think that in that case, that the Papuan army are real dumb. You have to think that for that to be true. Like, oh, they won't think to put guns on these things.
Yeah, if you were genuinely, if what you said was genuinely 100% the truth, like, well, you know, they had gun holes where they could put guns, but why would they put guns on them?
Well,
they wouldn't even think to put guns on them.
Yeah.
Or you're like, oh, well, you know, if they put guns on them, it's not my problem. I didn't think they would put guns on them.
This is, I think, not dissimilar. It's like we're sending parts of web.
That's what I'm thinking, is this does facilitate a kind of round exchange where it's like, okay, well, Saudi makes a deal with the US, for example. The US is like, perfect, we want to send you some stuff. Obviously, we've got issues where we can't directly send you this for whatever reason, or the UK or whatever. Someone makes a deal with someone and goes like, yes, we want to help you with sending these things, but we will have to send it via, like, you know, like a three-way trade in the NBA.
Exactly.
You know? It's like, make, okay, the salaries work. We'll give Australia this thing, they'll ship this to you, the UK will ship this section, and when you put it together, you have a bomb.
Like, exactly,
you
know, but no one's like sent a bomb. No one's sent broken a bomb, anything so they're signed on to.
Exactly. Everybody's just like, oh, well, we didn't, you know, we were to the letter of all the law.
Exactly.
In the clear.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the fact that they're two very geographically similar, like in a dumb guy way, very similar countries, but also I think in the way that they operate, have historically operated, maybe, like, the time is offset, but I think the same stories are kind of being told.
Yeah, I'm really, really interested to kind of get into a breakdown between Australia and Saudi Arabia. I think that would be really, really interesting to get into.
I think we'll be back with part two of this story next week.
Hell yeah.
But I don't want to promise that to the listeners just in case we have a change of plans, but shouldn't have come.
Yes. Hey, we're a podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what we do and you'd love to support us, please check out our Patreon. That is www.patreon.com/shouldn'tacome. That's shouldntacome. You can also contact us by email at shouldn'tacome@gmail.com. Please email us. We'd love to hear from you. And the EOS Canberra phone number.
As Electro-Optic Systems.
If you're interested in giving them a buzz and seeing what the fuck they're doing, why don't you give them a call on 02-6222-7900.
Yeah, just see what they have to say about all of this.
Yeah, ask your local Canberra weapons manufacturer what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, and why.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of Saudi Arabia is why we shouldn't have come. All right, bye everyone.
Bye.